Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for coming this morning to listen to WHO representative and head of mission in Libya, Dr. Jafar Hussein. Some of you may have met him already. He was our representative in various countries. So Dr. Hussein will give us an update on the health situation in Libya as of today, and then he will take some of your questions. Dr. Hussein, can you hear us?
Yes, Tariq, I can hear you loud and clear.
Great. So I will now give you the floor for your introductory remarks to Geneva-based journalist here at Palais. Please go ahead.
Sure, a pleasure. Thank you so much. Good morning, colleagues. I just wanted to give you an update on the situation in Libya, especially Tripoli. As you may know very well, that the conflict has started in and around Tripoli from 5th of April. Surprisingly, when the Secretary General was on the ground, the UN Secretary General, and since then it has intensified. So far, the reports we have, which WHO gathers through MOH and through its own staff, 377 people injured, casualties, and among them 58 deaths and the remaining injured. Painfully, there are civilians in that. We have a confirmed report of 15 casualties among the civilians, with seven deaths and remaining injured. And more painfully, there are four health workers in those casualties, three doctors, two doctors and one ambulance driver died, and one medical technician yesterday when his ambulance was targeted, or his ambulance was caught in the crossfire while extracting patients, was injured. Luckily, he survived, but he's in the hospital. The situation is becoming more ballistic and tense. Fighting is closing onto the from the outskirts to the inside of the Tripoli, and that our fear is that there will be more civilian casualties once that advance of the LNA is move forward, and obviously the GNA forces are engaging the LNA to stop them not to enter, and then obviously the more they enter into the densely populated area of Tripoli, which will increase to a greater extent the likelihood of civilian casualties, displacements, and so on and so forth. We have currently around more than 6,000 people displaced from the conflict zone to safer places, mostly in schools or in some other government building they have been housed. There are children among them, there are women among them, and there are old people among them. We have the hospitals in the conflict zone. Major issue is access for the people there, not only for the people there, but also for the health workers there. As I said, four health workers already, two doctors, one driver died, and one medical technician was injured. So we are very much concerned that, one, the people access to the hospital is extremely limited because of the conflict. But at the same time, more worrying is that if they were able to reach there, there will be less number of health workers because what they are fearing for their own life and not being able to come to seek care for those who are severely wounded. We have also the challenge for those hospitals and ambulance department to have supplies, because life-saving supplies because, again, basically because of the access issue, and also because the for partners to push in supplies, NGOs or UN partners also have the face the same challenge. Over and all, the WHO working very closely with its UN partners as well as Ministry of Health, particularly the ambulance and emergency department and the wounded department of the wounded. We have established 23 emergency mobile teams for the same reason that if somebody cannot access a hospital, those can be extracted from the place to a safer place where they can be admitted to a hospital or provide care. Or in minor cases, because the emergency mobile team is a doctor or a couple of doctors in many cases, nurses, paramedics with required supplies can be treated there and there on the spot. We are also able to access with our supplies some hospitals in the very active war zone like Tarhuna, where we have been able to push supplies because there is a very active conflict going on there with the possibility of more casualties. We are keeping a very strong eye on, because of the displacement, on the outbreaks, because with the displacement and putting population in areas which are not proper dwellings, the water sanitation system, the food quality and all those is compromised, obviously. So there is a huge likelihood of outbreaks. And then obviously we have a lot of migrants who are in the detention center. They are being moved from one place to another. And then there are communicable diseases among the migrants. And then if the population is coalesced in a place where the Libyans and the migrants can are in close vicinity, there is always a possibility of increase in the prevalence and incidence. And so we have a disease early warning system, which we have reinforced and reemphasized so that we are able to even pick the very early occurrence of any communicable disease. And then thirdly, we have stockpiled our supplies from three different strategic places, noting and knowing that when the fighting escalates, and it's very likely that it will. Our supplies are strategically positioned in Tripoli in three different places so that we don't have the challenge of only relying on one place if it is affected, or if the road to that is affected, then we will have a problem, so not being able to take out supplies. Whether these supplies are enough for the current few days phase, yes. But obviously, looking at the nature of the conflict and the political dynamics around it, we strongly believe that the conflict, the peak of the crisis has yet to come. And obviously, this will make more people susceptible. And we will then need more supplies. One of the problem, obviously, is because the Mitiga airport now is off and on closed and open. And because of the vulnerability of it and being hit by air raid, that's the only viable airport in Tripoli. The UN flights have stopped coming to the airport, and we are working with our headquarter colleagues to airlift some of the supplies from Brindisi But then obviously, as I said, the challenge of the having these landed at the Mitigi airport is extremely high. The second is that we definitely will need more supplies, not only in the south of Tripoli, but in the center of Tripoli, because if the conflict starts moving, zeroing in on the center of Tripoli, obviously more and more casualties becoming to the center, the major hospitals in the center of Tripoli. And then obviously we definitely will be needing funds. We are okay for a week or two, because these emergency mobile teams and the other operational costs in Libya, plus preventing of outbreaks and pre-positioning efforts and supplies and mechanisms in places of strategic importance from the health perspective, we will run out of our core funding quickly. We thank the donors. Some of them have approached us and assured of their support, but obviously, looking at the nature of the conflict, we will require more funding, because in all probability this is going to go for a relatively longer period, weeks and months. Can I just end up and reconfirm the total figure as of today, as of last night, because we issue every 11 p.m. our report. 398 casualties, 75 dead, 323 wounded, and 17 out of them are civilian, which is 7 dead and 10 wounded. And as I said, 4 of them are health workers among the casualties. Tariq, I stop here and let the colleagues and friends, if they have any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Hussein. That was very interesting. And thanks for repeating the numbers, because we couldn't hear numbers clearly at the very beginning. So now I will open the floor for questions. And if you can just introduce yourself for Dr. Hussein, because he may know you or may not. Lisa?
Good morning. Lisa Schlun, Voice of America.
Good morning, ma'am.
How are you? Are you feeling all right?
Yeah, we are okay. We are hearing a sound of doot-doot-doot, but that's fine.
Okay, take care of yourself. Oh, dear. About the supplies, how much longer will they last? And what kind of supplies will you most need? And now you say that you're unable to fly them in, and so you're shipping them from, was it Benghazi? I didn't quite get the name. Will you be able to ship enough supplies in? And then also, you have a fear of outbreak of diseases. What in particular?
Thank you so much. Supplies, we are currently, as I said, for 2 weeks, which we assume will be the peak, where the peak will reach. We do have enough supplies pre-positioned in 3 different strategic places, but we have backup supplies in Italy, in our WHO hub in Brindisi, where those supply, and Dubai, but obviously Dubai is relatively farther than Brindisi. And then we are working with the World Food Program, which is the logistic cluster head, and they have means and mechanism to airlift supplies in emergency. We are working on Mitiga Airport to be able to bring them there, but if that probability is very remote, then we will airlift them to either bring them by sea, because sea routes are still viable, and at the same time, or we may airlift them to Benghazi. From there, we can push them by road to Tripoli. Now, the types, obviously, in such situation, our highest priority is the trauma care supplies. We have the Italian trauma kits, which are very well structured and respond to any type of severe casualties. And then we have we normally tend to, we mean the humanitarian community, normally tend to overlook the chronic disease patients because those people are on lifelong chronic disease medicine. And we only cater for the acute response, but those patients do need medicines for managing their diabetes, for example. So if a diabetic patient does not get an insulin injection, obviously she or he will become more morbid or even the risk of losing life. So chronic disease medicine, and then one of the major issues we are facing in Libya because of migrants coming mostly from high endemic areas in TB and HIV, we ship also the TB HIV medicine to a greater extent in normal cases also, but obviously here when the likelihood of these being displaced and their treatment interrupted, and then the IV fluids. Because IV fluid is the replacement for blood loss in similar cases, or even God forbid we have any outbreak, IV fluid will be maintaining the lifeline of an individual. So these are roughly broadly the type of supplies which we are looking at. Thank you.
First the follow up, and then a part of my question that you didn't quite answer. I didn't really understand. You say that you have enough supplies for 2 weeks, which should be the peak of the conflict, as you said, but that you have supplies situated in different places around the country. But in total, how long will these supplies last? Will they be a matter of weeks, a matter of months? And then also I asked, what sort of disease outbreaks are you most concerned about?
Oh, sorry, I overlooked part of your question. Now, these supplies will last for 2 to 3 weeks for the acute phase. And we never know how long the acute phase is, how long it will go to protracted. as I said, TB, we are very worried about TB outbreaks, but more importantly, among children a vulnerable population who are displaced, because the displacement takes place not to a very ideal dwelling, water sanitation is always a major issue. And then most of the waterborne diseases, like acute watery diarrhea, like enteric fever, measles. End of last year, we had a major measles outbreak because of migrant child from Niger who came with a positive measles. And because of that, we ended up with more than 1,000 cases. And then WHO and UNICEF had to support the government to head a national campaign targeting 2.7 million children get vaccinated. So measles is our worry, TB is our worry, waterborne diseases, as I said, is our worry because of the compromised water and sanitation, compromised quality, which mostly these IDPs. As I said, currently approximately 6,000 people plus are displaced, but looking at the intensity of conflict, we have contingency plan for accommodating more and more IDPs or expecting more and more IDPs in thousands, if not in hundreds of thousands in the acute phase. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Hussein. Nick, please.
Good morning, Dr. Hussein, coming Bruce from the New
Good
York
morning,
Times.
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
Nice to hear from you. Thank you for coming online. I wonder, you mentioned the intensity of the conflict. Could you just give us a little bit of a scene setter on what are the conditions in Tripoli in terms of the intensity of the fighting there? And you mentioned two doctors who were killed. Do you have any information on the circumstances in which they were killed? Was that shelling of hospitals? Was that were they in the streets? Any detail would be helpful. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you so much, Nick. Well, at the center of Tripoli is pretty much normal. Normal in the sense that there is life going on, there is no shelling taking place, there is no indirect firing coming in. But the south of Tripoli, and now the last evening, because every day we have, at the end of the day, we have an intense security meeting. The last evening, the information given to us is that there are three fronts, but there are maybe additional fronts today or tomorrow, moving in into the center of Tripoli, and obviously, as you very well know, from one side it's LNA and allied forces, from this side is GNA forces, but the GNA forces have different geographical location in Tripoli where they are confronting the LNA. Our major worry of escalation is increase in the airstrikes, which we have witnessed in the last few days. They have increased from both sides, and also the use of heavy artillery. And then, the if at all the LNA forces are able to cross the current front line to come closer to the more densely populated city areas, that obviously will increase the chaos inside the center of Tripoli, and obviously will end up with more casualties, particularly with the use of airstrikes and very very heavy weapons. But so far, the center of Tripoli is relatively calm, and there isn't. We have not witnessed any direct artillery shell coming or airstrikes taking place on the center of Tripoli, or any government installations which are in the center of Tripoli. Dick, what was your second question?
The second question was the circumstances in which the two doctors were killed.
Well, they were not in the hospital. Actually, unfortunately, they all of these four were affected, three dead and one injured, were in the line of duty. They were in the ambulances. So far, five ambulances have been hit in a bit for them to extract the wounded people from the conflict zone, and those to our understanding were indirect attempt. I mean, they were hit not purposefully, but shrapnel, because there is intense artillery firing. Two were hit by rockets, one was hit by a big shrapnel, and the last one, the fourth one also, by one small shrapnel which hit directly the medical technician after hitting the window in the ambulance. So all of them were in ambulance. They were not in hospital, but they were on road to support or help the casualties being taken out from the war zone to a safer place in hospital. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for that. One quick follow-up. I'm interested to hear you say the center of Tripoli is pretty calm. Are we seeing civilians trying to get out of the city, trying to get out of the line of fire, or are people just kind of hunkering down at home, hoping for the best?
A very interesting phenomenon, Nick, and a very interesting question. You know, Libya is traditionally a very culturally strongly knitted society in terms of friends, relatives. We are witnessing, and this we witnessed it actually in the September conflict also, that even if there are conditions which necessitate for them to leave, they prefer to stay behind for two reasons. One is that because their extended families are there, so they don't want to leave the extended families and friends. The second is what happened in the September conflict, that those who moved, their houses were looted. So they are very worried about their belongings, leaving them behind in a house or in an apartment, and somebody will come and loot them. So, but now they are increasingly, because I can tell you that we have national staff in those areas, like Enzara, for example, is the place which is mostly affected. And till yesterday morning, we were appealing to our staff to move with her family to a safer place, and we can arrange that. And she was saying, my husband and my in-laws are not willing to move because we will leave the house full and somebody will come, and then we are extended families here. But then yesterday morning, because the day before there was a heavy shelling in Enzara, so they we were able to move them to a safer place here in Janzur, which is where our UN compound is, and it's relatively much safer than the rest of. So it's a mixed sort of issue, which why people still prefer to be in places, but obviously with the intensity increasing phenomenally, they have no choice but to move. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Hussein. Any questions, Lisa? Follow up?
Yeah. Hi, Lisa here again. I'd like to ask you about the refugees and migrants that are in, I believe there are two detention centers in or near Tripoli. You had mentioned earlier, I believe, that migrants had been moved. Now, have all the migrants and refugees in these detention centers, and I believe there are thousands there, been moved, and where to? Are they in a safe place or not? I mean, hopefully.
Okay, thank you, Lisa. The detention center in Enzara has been completely evacuated. IOM, UNHCR, actually, it was a very brave and daring operation supported by the UNDSS. They found a window of an opportunity, and they extracted all the migrants from Enzara. UNHCR last year has established a facility called GDF, which is in a safer place and much bigger. So they moved all of them to that place. And then since yesterday, there are efforts to move the detention, the migrants and refugees in the detention center in Abu Salim to the same facility. Now, it is challenging in the way that access is an issue, because it depends which party is there. And control that area. But there is a lot of effort from IOM and UNHCR working closely with the Ministry of Interior, that they call the DCIM branch, which is taking care of all the detention centers, to move the IDPs in these areas. They move the migrants and refugees from the conflict zone to the GDF facility. Now, there is a challenge, and the challenge is that the more the conflict will increase and it affects the detention centers, the more this phenomena will multiply, and then the GDF will not have enough capacity to have all of them, because from all detention center, if they move to, they say, one facility, it will not have enough space. So yesterday we had a discussion to see if there are alternative places where we can, we mean the UN and the humanitarian community, especially IOM and UNHCR, can move the, if it is required to move the. But yes, these two detention centers you mentioned, Enzara completely evacuated, Abu Salim hopefully in a day or two evacuated to the GDF. Thank you, Lisa.
How many people in total?
In Enzara, there were 2,200 people. And Abu Salim, I think it's the same number, more or less, around 3,000 who needs to be moved to a safer place.
Thank you.
Nick?
Dr. Hussain, a follow-up from Nick Cumming Bruce. I wonder if the warring parties have been made aware of the locations of hospitals. Have they given any assurances that they will respect these facilities? And if they have, do you have any confidence that these assurances will actually protect these facilities?
Thank you, Nick. It's a very important question. And to be very honest, we are a little bit struggling with it. The issue is that while they do, yes, there has been a contact through our UNDSS, Humanitarian Office of the Human Rights, and also the UNSMIL, because the UNSMIL is the one who has regular contact with the warring factions. And we have shared with them the GPS coordinates of all the hospitals and health centers, which WHO has. We conducted a study in 2017, and every health facility has a GPS coordinate now. And they have assured that we will never or will rarely whatever target health facility. But Nick, if you look at the different conflicts in Libya, whether it was in Benghazi or it was in Darna, it was in South, or it is now here or elsewhere or in Sirte, the issue is that one, these weapons they have are not precision weapons. So it may land anywhere, including a hospital. Yeah. And then secondly, what we witnessed in Benghazi especially, when there was this 2 years before operation against terrorists, and then we have witnessed in Sirte also, that some of the forces may take refuge in a hospital while retreating, or thinking that hospital may not be targeted, and they may take refuge in it and start fighting from there. And then, unfortunately, the hospitals are targeted. I have seen hospitals in Sirte. I have seen hospitals in Benghazi myself who were badly damaged, burnt, and hit by air, by bombs from the air for the same reason. And then, as I said, the rockets may land anywhere. You know, they are not precision weapons, most of cases, and they may get astray and hit a hospital. And the ambulances being hit is a glaring example of that, which I said that all health workers, the doctor, then the driver, and who unfortunately died, and the medical technician, they were hit in ambulances. Thank you.
Could I just follow up on that last thing that you said? Sorry. You seem to indicate that none of these attacks on hospitals and ambulances so far are deliberate. Is that correct?
Because we don't have, Lisa, information that these were deliberate. So for us, the contrary is what we absorb. Or what we embrace, because we don't see in the last week or so conflict that a deliberate attempt has been made in a hospital or any hospital being targeted so far.
Thank you very much, Dr. Hussain. Are there any other questions in the room? I can't see. Stephanie?
Sorry, Dr. Reuters, Stephanie Nebehe, could you just clarify? I thought at one point you said something about the airport there being closed. Then I think you said it was off and on or part of the days. At the moment, the status is that the UN is able and is willing to take the risk of bringing things in through that airport, or is it out of bounds now, please?
Thank you, Stephanie. For bringing in staff and taking out staff, the UN flights have been asked, the UN plan flights are not using Mitiga Airport anymore because of the risk involved. The aviation authorities of Mitiga Airport also have shifted their timings of operation from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. So for routine sort of things like the passengers movement, UN passengers movement, the airport is out of bounds. But for emergency supplies, there is a possibility that which we are discussing with the World Food, and they are also discussing among their own aviation, because UNHAS is a bigger, very big operation worldwide, to see the possibility of airlifting this at a time where the commercial airport is also being operational. Those timings I told you. But there is a big but. The but is that the risk is quite high because the uncertainty around any time this airport can be hit, and it has been shown to can be hit, is there. So we are looking at balancing the risks as well as the necessity of life-saving supplies being airlifted and exploring the possibility of bringing them to Mitiga Airport. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Hussain. And if there are no other questions, and I can't see any, we will thank you for your call. And obviously remind journalists that your team is always at a disposal to provide information if needed. Dr. Hussain, thank you very much for being with us today, and have a safe and nice day.
Thank you, Tariq, and thank you, all colleagues. Thank you so much.